How did the universe begin? How did life start? How did living things arise? Explore these big questions at the 4th Annual Westminster Conference on Science and Faith on April 5th through 6th in the Greater Philadelphia area. Visit www.scienceandgod.org for more details. This year's theme is How Did It All Begin? And features speakers such as renowned Oxford University mathematics professor John Lennox, leading intelligent design theorist Stephen C. Meyer, Dr. Vern Poitras, author of Redeeming Science, molecular biologist Dr. Douglas Axe, who is co-author of Science and Human Origins and director of the Biologic Institute, Discovery Institute senior fellow Dr. John G. West, who is author of Darwin Day in America, and more. For more details and to register, visit www.scienceandgod.org. That's www.scienceandgod.org. Now back to ID the Future.
Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. One of the consistent attacks on the scientific theory of intelligent design is the claim that it's not scientific at all, but faith-based. Critics deliberately conflate intelligent design with creationism in an attempt to quarantine intelligent design discussions to the realm of the humanities. They try to label it as faith-based and leave it to languish as a byproduct of religion. No discussion about the science of it or even what it is need ever take place. Of course, intelligent design is not based on holy texts, but observation. While intelligent design is not faith-based, it wouldn't conflict with faith in a creator. Closely accompanying this kind of purposeful distortion is often the insinuation that faith is incompatible with the scientific pursuit of knowledge, that faith, by its very nature, does not inspire the pursuit of knowledge, but must hinder it. It's an easy but inaccurate caricature. It's unfair to the many thousands of people who value both science and their faith, and it's also demonstrably false. From Copernicus to Newton, from Johannes Kepler to Gregor Mendel, giants in the history of science have been inspired by their faith to make their pursuits. Today's science stands on the accomplishments of many men of faith. Just as the frequent abuse of the term anti-science is actually a political term, not a scientific term, the ugly bias against faith is designed to achieve political, not scientific ends. Here to talk about it with me is Dr. John West, Discovery Institute Senior Fellow, Vice President for Public Policy and Legal Affairs, and the Associate Director of the Center for Science and Culture. When you hear it implied that religion's not compatible with scientific pursuits or that it's a hindrance to it in the context of Western civilization, who do you think of?
Well, I think of the people who are making that claim, like the Richard Dawkins of the world. That's so far from the truth, whether it be Galileo or Newton or you name it, for the founders of what is known as modern science, they were almost, without exception, pretty devout believers in God, and in fact, in many cases, thought that they could see and ascertain order in the universe because it was created by an orderly God. And you're exactly right that that helped inspire the scientific enterprise for many people. But I think the real issue today, the people who make that claim, is for those of us who live in America, where we pride ourselves on religious freedom and equality of all citizens, that is a very anti-liberty, anti-free speech, and certainly anti-freedom sort of argument. And in fact, I think that people should be appalled when that argument is made. Because regardless of whether someone happens to be religious or not, they have the right to participate in the public life, and that includes in science and the arts. And the idea that your religious beliefs would disqualify you from operating as a scientist or operating in public life as in politics or in some other sphere is really antithetical to the type of regime set up by our founders. If you really believe that all human beings are created equal and endowed with certain inalienable rights and that they have the right to be treated equally and have equal rights before the law, equal rights to participate in the public sphere, people making the sort of argument that we don't even need to listen to you because you happen, say, to believe in God, is just a gross violation of our compact as a country and of our founding documents. And so I really think that people ought to be called when they make that sort of argument, yet it's so typical. In the news media, in the lobbying groups, the big science lobbying groups, we experience this in the intelligent design movement all the time. Oh, Michael Behe happens to be a Catholic, therefore we don't have to listen to him on the science. Well, that's poppycock. And in fact, it's also hypocritical, because the very people who are often making that argument themselves have very strong metaphysical views. I mean, Richard Dawkins, last time I checked, was still an avowed atheist who in fact thinks that Darwin's theory helps make you an intellectually fulfilled atheist. But when is the last time someone in the news media or someone at the National Center for Science Education said, disregard Richard Dawkins' views on science and on Darwinian evolution because he's an atheist?
Right. The implication is that the proper starting point is the atheistic worldview, according to this line of criticism. And when these other giants of science who had a faith are brought up, it's dismissed as though, well, that wasn't central to their thinking, or if anything, that hindered their thinking. But that's not the case.
No, that's true. But I think that the more central thing here is not whether even the founders of science were devout people, and many of them were, and that certainly undermines the case that you have to be an atheist to do good science. I mean, that's just any historian of science would just laugh and scoff at that claim, worth his salt. That's just a ludicrous claim. But I think the more sinister claim is that today is claiming that if you are a person of faith, and you don't just see this in the science realm, you see it in the public policy realm, you see it in the arts, you see it throughout our society, a claim is being made that if you're a person of faith, then that disqualifies you from speaking publicly on anything. Mm-hmm. No matter how well grounded your views are, no matter what evidence you cite, that it can just be ignored. And the sinister thing here and the hypocritical thing is that the very people making this claim often themselves have very, very direct motives. But to them, that doesn't matter. In other words, they're being hypocritical. I remember actually being at a conference speaking at a state university a couple of years ago before a largely hostile crowd where I got a question, someone attacking William Dembski, who's a major intelligent design theorist, basically along the lines of, how can we trust Dembski because he happens to be a Christian, and so that somehow refutes his views on science, despite the fact that he has two doctorates from very strong universities, has published peer-reviewed technical pieces, and is an outstanding scholar. And so I said, okay, if you're going to say that, are you, willing to disqualify someone like Richard Dawkins or Eugenie Scott, the National Center for Science Education, people who are avowed atheists? And, of course, the person wasn't. And so, it's great hypocrisy here. Either motives count against everyone, mm-hmm. at which we won't have any public conversation on anything, because everyone has underlying beliefs about ultimate reality. or, really, we should just stop going down that red herring and look at what the evidence actually says and allow ourselves to have a real conversation. And a real conversation means having different conversation partners who do come at it from different viewpoints, and not simply belittling them before you hear the evidence because of what you think their underlying metaphysical views happen to be, either pro or con.
When can religion become a hindrance, and when does it become an advantage?
I think religion, just like any underlying belief system, can become a hindrance if people are so blinded by that they're not open to the evidence of reality, and if they, say, in public conversations, aren't willing to offer evidence for their views and simply say, well, my authority says this, therefore you must be wrong, end of story. The point I would make is that that can happen with certain religious people. That can happen with secularists who are so enamored that their view is right, whether it be Darwin's theory, whether it be certain potential understandings of global warming or other issues, that they can't deign to actually answer your objections and provide reasons and actually treat you with respect in the conversation. So religion can hinder that in some respects. But any sort of underlying belief can, depending on how it's taken. Now, where religion, particularly sort of the Judeo-Christian tradition, has been a great boon to science, and many historians of science and philosophers of science have pointed this out. Steve Meyer has pointed this out, Stanley Yockey, many others, that the very idea in the Judeo-Christian tradition that there is a God outside of space and time who is not just rational but super rational, and that the created order reflects this, does provide an inspiration that you can actually find regularities in nature and can understand it as a very ordered process, not just as a series of chaotic processes, and that you can find purpose in nature. And so when you're trying to understand the workings of cell and doing, in essence, reverse engineering, you actually are, whether you claim to be a Darwinian or not, you're actually using a design perspective on that. And certainly if one happens to be a Christian or a Jew or another sort of monotheist who actually thinks that there is a God who is a God of order, that certainly provides an additional inspiration to go out and find that order. And that certainly was a positive contribution that faith has made in the development of modern science.
Why do you think there are some areas of science in which professionals are more open to religion than others?
That's a really good question, because if you do the surveys, at, say, in the National Academy of Sciences, the surveys that show among biologists, 94.4% describe themselves as atheists or agnostics. But when you get to physics or engineering or other disciplines, you have a lot more theists. And frankly, I think one of the issues is the cultural impact of Darwinism. Darwin's theory wasn't just about change over time, wasn't just about change over a long period of time. It was the claim that basically the history of life is an unguided, undirected process. That was its core. That's what Darwin thought he was doing. He thought he was coming up with a designer substitute. And so I think that explains why is it, what's so special about biology that at the very top ranks of biologists in places like the National Academy of Sciences, or there have been surveys of four-year research universities, again, much higher proportion of atheists and agnostics among biologists, leading biologists, than in other scientific disciplines. And I think that is the leftover legacy, the pernicious legacy for human thought of Darwin's theory. And in many of the scientific disciplines that are not so much in the thrall of Darwin, whether it be chemistry or physics or mathematics or engineering, then you are more open to seeing the evidence. And then some fields like computer science and engineering, where it becomes very clear that in order to get highly functional order out of exquisite complexity, that just doesn't happen through chance and necessity. That chance and necessity leads usually to the breakdown of systems, not to the building up of systems. I think they have a keener appreciation for what it takes to put together something as complicated as a working cell.
And there's a very aggressive evangelistic quality to the neo-Darwinian atheism that you're talking about there in biology, where there's an outgoing message to all other branches of science that if you are open to these other things, you're anti-science. You cannot be in favor of scientific pursuits. And you would describe that as a dangerous approach to thinking, really.
Yes, and in fact, it goes back to the very beginnings of Darwinism. Often today, people mistakenly think, oh, that's just something added by later people, like people today like Richard Dawkins. But if you go back to the very origins of the theory, Darwin, the sort of people he collected around him, like his so-called bulldog Thomas Henry Huxley, they were that sort of aggressively anti-religious from the very beginning. And so that means that Darwinian biology from the very beginning was part science. And I want to give Darwin credit to being, I think, a brilliant scientist in looking at the facts of nature as he found them and trying to understand them. But it was also always part ideology and part metaphysics from the very beginning. And you get this in Darwin himself in his book, The Descent of Man, that gives a very reductive explanation for morality, let alone religion, and actually talks about today what one would call social Darwinism, and really you see the beginnings of things like eugenics in Darwin himself, but then also in Huxley and the other people who collected around Darwin, who really had this quasi crusading, quasi-religious fervor. This was a worldview for them, and it was, in their view, refuted a religious worldview, and that's one of the reasons why they were so excited about it. And so that's the people that they tried to recruit were people who they also wanted to be, who were basically anti-religious. And those, say, who were initially attracted to Darwin, say like St. George Jackson Mivart, who was a gifted Catholic zoologist, who liked and initially believed in Darwin's theory, but when it became clear that Darwin was so about pushing this as an unguided, undirected process, despite what the evidence might show, Mivart broke with him on that and actually published some books showing that natural selection itself could only do certain things and not all the things Darwin was claiming for it. Well, Mivart was then sort of booted out of the Darwinian circle. How dare he raise any questions about the extent of natural selection? And the fact that he was Catholic was, say, not a plus for the Darwin circle. So I think people need to understand that this metaphysical fervor or anti-metaphysical fervor of Darwinism was baked into the theory from the very beginning. It's not an add-on. It's not an add-on by Richard Dawkins. In fact, when Richard Dawkins talks about Darwinism helping making you be an intellectually fulfilled atheist, he is not adding on something to Darwin's theory. That was baked into the theory from the very beginning. And that has really had, for the course of science, has really been unhelpful, because it means that you have all these politicized things in biology that shouldn't be, because it's all mixed together. It was mixed together from the very beginning.
Implicit in that argument is that only science has knowledge worth knowing, as though there's no other discipline that adds to human knowledge. Why do you think it is so many people fall for that kind of reasoning today?
That's what George Gilder likes to call the materialist superstition. This is part of a much larger story, but I think for the past several thousand years of human history, there have basically been a big debate as to whether things ultimately sort of self-organize just through blind matter in motion, or when you see the sort of purpose that you find in nature, does that give evidence of mind? What are the irreducible properties of the universe? If you go back to the very beginning, is it mind, or is it just blind, purposeless matter? For most of human history, it wasn't really a question for most people, because you just look at blind matter, it can't do much. And so just the common sense understanding was it had to be mind. Darwin really was the first one to help make plausible the materialist superstition, because in coming up with natural selection acting on random variation, although there were lots of materialists before Darwin, he finally came up with something that at least seemed to many people to be a convincing mechanism for materialism. And so I think that Darwin has helped make plausible this idea that, you know, everything can just be explained in matter and motion. So I think that's one part of why people today gravitate toward that. I think another reason is we've just had these, for a whole century, of these reductionistic explanations where people are used to hearing that, oh, that's just your chemicals, or, oh, that is just, name it, some subrational component that's supposed to explain everything and there is no free will. We've just been awash in those explanations. And then finally, I think some of the materialists have tried to piggyback on the success of technology. It is certainly true that you can do wonderful things in the world of technology by applying our knowledge of material things. From your computer that people may be listening to this on, to radios, to television, to going to space, to modern medicine, to antibiotics. I mean, material-based science has done really wonderful things and has opened our eyes to many things that we never even conceived of. All that's true, but I think if actually people look at it in many of those areas, for one, many of the technological achievements, it's not just blind matter in motion. It's actually mind helping to direct matter to create things. So if anything, that's evidence of intelligent design. And also, I think people don't realize that the more we've gone into the heart of matter, like DNA, that seems to function like a language code, the more we actually have been confronted with something that looks like mind. And so although the scientific materialists have tried to sort of latch on to the prestige of technology or any discovery of science as being the product of materialism. That, in fact, isn't true, but that is a sales job they've done. When's the last time you probably heard that if we didn't have Darwin, we wouldn't have modern medicine, which is absolute bunk. The germ theory of disease, I mean, many of the discoveries have nothing to do with Darwin's theory at all. But Darwinism tries to subsume everything, even if it isn't related to it.
Critics of intelligent design try and dismiss it as religion. What is the real relationship between faith and proponents of intelligent design?
Well, intelligent design actually tries to be based on the empirical data of science and what you can infer from that rationally. And so it intentionally understands itself as not being based on, say, religious presuppositions. So unlike, say, creationism, which goes to the Bible and tries to read, say, Genesis in a certain way and then goes out and looks to science to, well, how does that help support the things that we already see in the Bible. Intelligent design was an effort to look at, well, what is the empirical data of nature itself, and what can be discerned just from that? Now, you can't discern everything from that, but what can you discern from that? And so far from being based on theology, intelligent design is based on what do we actually know about nature, what do we know about how things of great complexity and functionality come into being. Because we have extensive experience from our own experience of the natural and social world that chance and necessity can only do certain things that typically cannot build up greater and greater complexity of things that actually work. Whereas intelligent causes, we see this in technology certainly, can do that. So intelligent design is actually an effort to understand what can be known from nature itself and the rational deductions from that. Now, although intelligent design is not based on scripture or on religion, might it have theistic or even theological implications? Sure. So it's not based on theology or theism, but it might have pro-theistic implications, just like I'd say Darwinism has anti-theistic implications, which is, if you look at the evidence of nature and it seems that the best explanation is that there was an intelligent cause, is that something that's harmonious with a theistic understanding of the world? Sure it is. Just on the other side, if you look at the evidence of nature and it seems to suggest that everything came about from a blind, purposeless process, would that seem to lend credence to an atheistic or a materialist worldview? Sure it does. That's why Richard Dawkins thinks that Darwin helps you become an intellectually fulfilled atheist. So although I'd say neither intelligent design nor evolution need to be said to be based on a religious or even an anti-religious worldview, they may have greater implications.
Dr. John West, Senior Fellow, Associate Director of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. For more information or to support the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, please go to idthefuture.com and click the yellow donate button.
ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.